101, Kathy E. Adams, appellate, commonly the right Secretary of State. Ms. Brunner, for the appellate, promptly, the appellate.
Good morning, Your Honors. Ellen Reno for the appellant, Kathy Adams. May it please the court. There are two reasons why the district court's decision needs to be reversed. First, the court erred in holding that an employer can discriminate on the basis of an impairment if that employer does not know about the substantial limitation that it has on the employee. That's wrong because it doesn't matter whether the employer knows or not. What matters is, in this question, is does the individual meet the definition of disability? And here, we argue that she does.
Well, it does matter as far as the employer knowing of the disability, because otherwise you can't discriminate.
Well, the employer did know of the disability. They knew of the impairment. They knew she had breast cancer. That's what they discriminated against.
Isn't the issue whether the employer has to know if it's an eligible impairment or not?
That's the issue, and I think the Supreme Court has already answered that they do not. In Bragdon, the dentist did not know that the HIV patient that came to him had a limitation in reproduction. The dentist didn't know, didn't care. It's not relevant to the...
That's the first prong, first of all. And second, I don't think that was ever in dispute that a dentist who was insisting on doing this procedure in a hospital did not know of the... effects of HIV. But go ahead.
Right, and so if the dentist didn't need to know the effects, then...
No, I'm saying it was never in dispute that he didn't know. When you consider, first of all, it was mentioned in the Supreme Court decision, but I don't think you can credibly say that a dentist who insisted on all of these precautions did not know of the effects of HIV or possible effects of HIV. So that case, as far as what does this employer have to know, I don't think answers the question.
So you're taking the inference then that the dentist knew that because the person had HIV, that they were substantially limited?
Of course.
I'm not sure why you're saying of course, because a lot of people with HIV are not substantially limited in reproduction. They have children. There are ways to do that.
He may not have known that specific thing, but Bragdon is a first prong, and there was never any discussion, in my opinion, of why, of whether he needed to know any more than he knew because it wasn't in dispute. But go ahead.
You're right, there wasn't any discussion, and I think that's because it's obvious that the dentist does not need to ask these kinds of personal questions, and I think it's just as obvious that an employer can discriminate against somebody with HIV or somebody who's had breast cancer without asking about these details of their personal lives. In fact, I think Arlene might actually, the Supreme Court decision in Arlene might be more on point because they do reject an argument there that I think is more similar. In that case, the hospital said, not the hospital, I'm sorry, the school said that they did not terminate the tuberculosis survivor because of her physical impairment. They terminated her because of the risk of contagion. And so while it's not saying they didn't need to know, they are saying it doesn't matter I mean, the employer in Arlene was saying they ignored the physical limitations. So if that argument is rejected, then I think similarly this argument has to be rejected, because we don't need employers going around asking people about their sexual relations and also about the other important tasks in their daily life.
Can I ask you, is breast cancer always a disability under your argument, or could some people who've had breast cancer be disabled and others not be?
Well, it has to be an individualized inquiry. So yes, I would say, especially in the major life activity of sexual relations, not everyone who's had breast cancer has a mastectomy. Not everyone who's had a mastectomy feels the way Ms. Adams does. But I think that doesn't matter, because it has to be very specific. And the Toyota case is specific to that, that you don't...
So I guess those questions are going to have to be asked then.
Well, they're asked in the litigation. That doesn't mean that an employer needs to ask. I don't think we
so
want...
So you think an employer, I just want to be clear...
Employers just shouldn't discriminate.
Right, but if it's a disability in some cases and not a disability in others, as a policy matter, sure. I'm just trying to figure out on the disability law. In some cases, if it's a disability, in other cases, it's not. The only way the employer is going to be able to figure out whether it's a disability by asking these questions, which are questions most employers aren't going to want to ask.
Or alternatively, they could avoid the risk of violating the law altogether and not base a decision on whether someone has breast cancer, but look at the actual facts of what follow-up she needed. I mean, let's not forget here, we have a very strong case that the employer had this overreaction to the fact that she needed follow-up care and exaggerated who needed to do it and even compared her to very emergency situations that are completely unlike the need to schedule a six-month breast exam, which, I mean, I think most people know it's a two-minute breast exam that any doctor and most nurse practitioners are qualified to give. And so the fact, I think they're being disingenuous when they're saying we had no knowledge that this was a disability because we didn't know that she had this psychological fear of intimate relations. Because they clearly viewed her as somebody who had significant medical concerns. Also, these are, medical doctors making this decision, and it's well known that survivors of breast cancer, especially those who've had mastectomies, do have this fear of intimate relations
after the mastectomy. Your client has a current disability?
She does, yes.
So it's not just a record of disability.
Right. She, to this day, I'm sorry?
What is the current disability?
The current disability is the effect of the breast cancer is still with her, the fact that she is still not engaging in sexual relations.
Didn't she disavow that theory in the district court?
She disavowed. She doesn't have cancer.
No. Didn't she, I thought in the district court, that she insists in the district court that her disability is cancer, not the consequences of it.
Well, the physical, the definition.
She's not alleging that the scars are the disability.
Right.
Right.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say the definition of disability is really broken up into two parts in the Act. So I would say the physical impairment is the breast cancer. And the reason that the breast cancer qualifies for protection from discrimination is because in her case, it is substantially limiting her.
Correct. That I understand. But then I go back to Judge Kavanaugh's question, which is that with respect to the first prong of the statute, her disability, that is the cancer, was over by the time she lost her medical clearance.
Well, the effects of the cancer were not.
No, that's the substantial, that's the limitation on the substantial activity, right?
Right, that's
okay, so she can't qualify under the first. She has to qualify under the second one.
So you're
only a record of.
You're taking, I guess, my same position that the physical impairment causes a substantial limitation of major life activity and just saying it fits under the second prong better than the first.
Well, no, I'm asking you how it could possibly fit under the first, since at the time she lost her medical clearance, she didn't have breast cancer. which is her claimed physical disability.
She had no physical impairment.
See, there was a doctor said she was cancer-free, and she did too, at the time she lost her medical clearance.
But, I mean, I guess it depends on your definition of disability, because it was still disabling.
That's what this whole case is about, but there are two questions, aren't there? Question one, is there a physical or mental impairment?
Right.
Right? Question two is, that substantially limits a major life activity, correct?
Yes.
Okay. If the first element no longer exists at the time she was denied her clearance, then how can she qualify as a disabled person under the statute?
Well, I'm thinking of kind of two ways to answer that. The first is that she, even though she no longer had cancer, she still had the risk of recurrence, and that was still with her.
I don't think you pled that, though. I mean, I didn't see anywhere I understood your case to rise and fall on a very simple proposition, that she had cancer and that was the physical impairment that substantially limited a major life activity, right? That's your
right.
case.
Right, but because it's continuing to substantially, because the symptoms.
No, but you see, you're bleeding over into, it can't be that if the disability's gone. I mean, this is what the record of section was designed for, wasn't
well,
it?
Well, I'm happy to call it record of.
Okay.
The way that I looked at
answer.
It.
I think that's the right answer.
Okay.
Let me ask you about the third.
Okay.
The regarded as.
Regarded as, yes.
And there you claim that the limitation on the major life activity is work, right?
Well, what we claim is that we need discovery in order to lay that out, but that's what it's looking like.
No, but that's what your claim is for this one, right? That it limits, right, that's, she was regarded as unable to work, correct?
Yes, but I think in order to really carry that burden, we need discovery.
Suppose the record made it very clear that they didn't regard her as unable to work. You wouldn't need any discovery then, right?
Well, I don't see how we could have a full record without discovery.
Well, but both you and, let me put the question this way. Both the plaintiff and the State Department seem to agree that she is not limited in her ability to be a Foreign Service officer. She can do the job.
She says
she can do the job, and they say she can do the job.
No, they say she can't do the job.
No, they say, here's what Brown says in his affidavit. The determination, that is, to take away her classification, has nothing to do with whether Adams can engage in certain activities or perform essential functions of her position. Instead, it's an assessment of whether MED can perform its function.
Well, that's the way he prefers to phrase it. Yes, but the fact is they're not allowing her to have the position because they don't think she can travel overseas.
So her disability is, the limitation on a substantial life activity is travel, right?
Well,
and that's not a major life activity.
No, it's not a major life activity,
I mean,
but
it is for these poor customers of American Airlines. That's all they're doing, right? But for anybody else,
it's not
a major life activity.
But I think with more evidence, we'll be able to show that she was substantially limited, one, in the major life activity of working in foreign policy jobs, which I think is a broad range or class of jobs, but two, we don't know what else is going to come up in discovery because we have this, you know, Dr. Brown comparing her to these very ridiculous situations of, you know, a sudden asthmatic attack, a sudden heart attack, in all these places that actually have medical care for someone to get a breast exam. So we have this exaggerated fear, which is exactly what the act was designed to protect. I mean,
see, I've just never seen it. I'm trying to figure out how you put this case in each of these various categories.
Okay.
And what's odd about this is that everybody agrees she can perform the job, right? She says he can't.
That's what's discriminatory about it.
What?
That's kind of what's discriminatory about it, is that...
Okay, so then, that, what I don't understand is how she can be regarded as unable to perform the major life activity of working. There's other things maybe she can't do, but that's not one of them.
If Dr. Brown views her as somebody who is like a ticking time bomb, is walking around, and at any moment she could need an oncologist because she might have the equivalent of a heart attack or an asthma attack or you know, a sudden onset of seizures, like the people he compared her to, and this is without taking his deposition, I'm seeing this window into his mind that says he has a very exaggerated idea and a huge misconception about what happens to a woman after she has breast cancer, and that is exactly what the Rehabilitation Act is designed to protect against, the myths and fears of, and specifically cancer. The Congress mentioned cancer as a disability that it was intending to protect in three different committee hearings, and when they passed
right,
the bill...
But you've already conceded that some forms of cancer don't produce limitations on major life activity. So in that sense,
that's the other prong.
Cancer is not protected, right?
That's the other prong. On this prong, we're having the fact that they have these myths and preconceived notions about cancer.
Correct. But let's assume that they had, and again, I think this is repeating the question Judge Kavanaugh asked earlier. Let's assume that they have all their myths and preconceptions are completely inaccurate. They're exactly the kind of entity Congress had in mind, okay? But that she had no limitation on a major life activity at all.
Well, it doesn't matter on this prong. What we're talking about is what they regard her as. And if their perception of her is that she's this ticking time bomb, how can she work?
Uh-huh.
What kind of job can you have? I mean, I'm not sure there are any jobs. I certainly think she would be precluded from a broad class of jobs if she is a person walking around who at any given moment can need an oncologist because she might have... I mean, I have no idea what he's thinking in comparing her to somebody who could suddenly have seizures and need to be evacuated or have a heart attack all of a sudden. I mean, anybody could have an emergency situation like that.
What are we to make of the EEO complaint in July of 2004 in which she says, I have resumed all physical activities? The first complaint makes no mention of this limitation. It isn't until the amended complaint.
I think we were within the time frame for amending the complaint, and it was just a theory of...
statement, I have resumed all physical activities, 6 or 7, however many, this was July of 2004.
And you're saying because sexual relations would be a physical activity. I suppose she wasn't thinking of it that way, that it's because it's really like an emotional thing for her. And so I would say that's just an oversight in drafting the first complaint, that we didn't think of, you know, the sexual relations. It wasn't until...
How about the July 2004? What are we to make of that?
July 2004 was the first.
No, July 2004 is the EEO complaint.
Oh, the EEO complaint.
In which she says, why do you believe you were discriminated against? My stage 1 breast cancer was removed in September 2003. I required no chemotherapy, and I have resumed all physical activity.
I would say that's a misstatement on her part, and really because she's not thinking of it as a physical activity at the time. I mean, I think sexual relations is a little bit different than a physical activity, so I don't think that precludes her from later making this claim. I think you could see how she would make that mistake. It's not the type of thing you're bringing up in an EEO meeting.
So we don't take from it that this limitation...
No, it did not occur after July of 2004. It occurred pretty much right away. I mean, once she had a mastectomy and she had these scars and she had fluid draining from her breast and, you know, she's on medication that suppresses her libido, and, I mean, it's all mixed in there together. It all happened right away. I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal if there are no more. I'm over my time. It says, okay. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Trump.
Still get some.
May it please the court, my name is John C. Truong, and I represent the Department of State, appellee in this case. We respectfully request that the court affirm the judgment of the district court, essentially for...
Sexual activity a major life activity?
It can be, if it, it can be.
Can be?
It can be, because it may...
Common sense is that it is, and if breast cancer causes a limitation on that, then it's a disability.
It can be. The reason I say it can be because it, to the extent that procreation may be implicated. That's why I'm
so. So your answer to the question then is actually no, even though you said yes, or can, you said can be. Your answer to the question is actually no, which I'm wondering how you square that with the OLC opinion in 88, which the Supreme Court's relied on, and not to mention with common sense.
Well, Your Honor, that we don't have to go that route, because what this case about is whether appellant was a disabled person under the Rehab Act as of December 2003.
Okay, so let's start with that issue, okay? You agree that cancer is a physical impairment, right?
When a person has cancer, yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's look at the record of, okay? Yeah. So cancer is a physical impairment. You aren't arguing that either that sexual activity is not a major life activity, nor are you challenging her allegation that she's limited in that major life activity, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so she's a disabled person under the statute.
Well, there are time frames here that we need to...
I'm only looking at the record of...
That's
assume
fine.
Assume I agree with you that she doesn't qualify under the first prong.
Okay.
Okay, let's assume I agree with you about that. So why doesn't she have a record of a disability? She has a physical impairment, you agree it's cancer, and you don't challenge either that sexual activity is a major life activity or that she alleges that she is significantly impaired in that activity.
Well,
so why isn't she disabled?
May I address your first question first, is that I'm not sure whether you said she had or has.
I'm looking at the record of.
Right. The record as we have it here in front of this court.
No, I think he's talking, Judge Tatel's talking about the record of prong.
The second prong.
Yeah.
The record of disability.
Yeah.
Well, the record that the agency had before it when it made the decision, that record showed that she was no longer a person with cancer.
Right, but she had a record of a disability that continued. In other words, you can have a disability, which is Judge Tatel's question, and then no longer have a disability. But when you no longer have a disability, you can have a record of a disability.
Right.
And here the State Department discriminated against her based on the record of disability, even assuming the disability no longer continued. You get that?
I understand that. It goes back to what Judge Henderson was asking counsel previously, was that whether the State Department had knowledge of that record of disability at the time it made the decision.
It had knowledge of her breast cancer. Yeah.
No, knowledge of her, because the record of her...
Yes, is the answer to that.
Okay.
Right. It had knowledge of her breast cancer condition back in December of 2003 when they make the decision. But as of December of 2003, according to her doctors, in Joint Appendix 581, she was cancer-free and
right,
she was no longer...
Right. That's why I said... Let's accept your argument that she doesn't qualify under prong one.
Right, okay.
Okay, just put that aside. Assume you've won that part of your case. You don't have to argue it anymore. The question is why she doesn't have a record of, and I assume that's because of your argument that, and this is, I'm relying on your brief now, your argument that she doesn't have a record of because although the State Department knew at the time they revoked her medical clearance that she had cancer in the past, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. That they didn't know about her substantially limited life activity participating in sexual relations, correct?
That's correct.
That's your argument. Okay.
Right.
So, number one, where do you find that requirement that the employer know about the major life activity limitation in the statute?
Well, it's not in the... I don't think it's specified in the statute per se, but...
It's not.
Two or three...
That's
cases,
a good answer.
Yeah.
Give me another
cases.
Reason.
I'm sorry?
Give me another reason. Well, what about Bragdon?
Well, Bradman actually doesn't really apply to this case.
Why not?
For one thing, for example, in Bradman, the Supreme Court found that the HIV person is a disabled person under the ADA.
No, I don't think that's right.
Well,
I think in Bradman, the person was disabled because A, she was HIV positive,
right,
and B, she had a limitation on a major life activity. That's why she was disabled.
Right. And
there was no evidence indication in the case that the employer knew about the latter.
Right. The dentist didn't know about the lack of procreation.
And that answers the question.
Why doesn't
here?
That answer the question?
Well, the problem here is that in the Bragdon case, when the Supreme Court arrived at the conclusion that the HIV aspect of it affected her procreation issue in that Bragdon case, the Supreme Court cited medical studies and analysis, what have you, to show that that is a natural cause.
Well, that's true here, too.
Not necessarily, Your Honor, not necessarily.
There's a lot of literature.
You don't argue either that sexual relations is a major activity or that she is not significantly impaired in it. Right? You don't make either of those arguments.
Right.
Your whole argument rises and falls on this knowledge point. Right?
Not only that, but the
No, is that right?
Right. For whether she had cancer at the point.
No.
Let me see if I can paraphrase what your position is.
Right. I think I'm making this more complicated than it is.
If the second prong said, or if the definition of impairment was not a physical or mental impairment, that substantially and so forth, if it said a serious physical or mental impairment, would the employer have to know both that it was a physical impairment and a serious mental physical impairment?
Yes, because...
And your position is yes.
Yes, the position is yes, because in order for the employer to be held accountable for discrimination under the Rehab Act, the employer has to make a decision with the awareness that the employee has such disability.
Even though that wasn't the case in Bragdon.
That's right. Well, Bragdon is not an employer.
Which is the Supreme Court case on point.
I understand. It's not that point, actually, because in that case, it's not an employer-employee relationship. You have a dentist who's treating
issue. Didn't know about the substantial limitation on the major. The dentist didn't ask about reproduction there.
That's true, but he...
Didn't know. We can't assume that the dentist even knew about that.
Right, but that question, Your Honor, stops at the first part of the Bradman analysis. The second part was the health risk to the dentist.
Let's try a hypothetical, okay? Can I try a different case on you? Okay, suppose an employee who's a telephone receptionist takes a leave of absence because he's having headaches, okay?
Okay.
He discovers right away that he has a malignant brain tumor. It's operated on, it's cured, he's cancer-free. The result of the operation, though, is that he has a very significant limitation in his hearing. He gets a letter from the employer. The employer discovers that the person has had a malignant brain tumor, tells him he can't come back. Now, is that not discrimination because the employer didn't know about the limitation on hearing?
No, it's not discrimination because the employer was not acting with the awareness that the employee had such a limitation.
But why? But the whole purpose of this statute, the legislative history and everything, was to protect cancer survivors who are cancer-free from discrimination. In my case, the employer discriminated against that person because that person had a malignant brain tumor. Now, how can you possibly interpret this in such a way as to not have that covered by the statute?
Well, Your Honor, because according to Your Honor's hypothetical, if the employer was aware of the tumor and fired the employee based because of that tumor.
That was my hypothetical.
Right, I understand. And that tumor is a disability.
Right.
Then if the employer fired that employee with full knowledge, then that's discrimination.
Okay, this case.
It's not, Your Honor.
It is this case. It's exactly this case.
Well, it's not because
in my hypothetical, the employer did not know of the limitation on the person's hearing, And in this case, the State Department didn't know of her limitation on sexual activity.
That's right.
Identical case.
My analysis is actually the discrimination based on not the lack of hearing that the employee suffered as a consequence of the tumor, but my answer was that the employer would discriminate against the employee if the employee was fired.
Let me tell you what my understanding of the law is, and you tell me why I'm wrong, okay? Sticking with my hypothetical.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, in my hypothetical, I would say that that person was in fact fired because of a physical or mental impairment, which then brought us to the next question of whether or not reasonable accommodation was needed for that person to return to work. And in that, at that level, the employer obviously would need to know the extent to which the person's hearing was limited to see whether he or she could return as a telephone receptionist. That's where the extent of the limitation, I'm just telling you my understanding,
right,
comes into effect. Now, in this case, well, do you agree with that, by the way?
Yes,
So let's go to this case now. In this case, we have the State Department concedes that they acted on the basis of her cancer. Okay, so she lost her clearance because of a physical or mental impairment, right?
No.
No?
Yes.
I think the answer has to be yes.
Well, the answer is, it's more nuanced than that. The answer is yes and no, because as of December of 2003.
No.
Okay.
You win on the first prong.
Okay. But I think You
win on the first prong.
Okay.
So with my hypothetical, she has a record of a disability. She had cancer, it's cured, it's a disability.
Okay.
That was the reason the State Department took into account. Right?
Right.
Okay. So under my understanding of the law, where the limitation on sexual activity comes into play is on whether or not they need to make any accommodation for that in her job. And clearly they don't, right?
And I'm not sure there is an accommodation.
Isn't. In fact, if the State Department had known, let me ask you the question this way. Suppose the State Department had known that she had a limitation on sexual activity. Would that have made any difference?
I don't think so.
You would agree that if they did know, she would have a record of a disability under your theory, right?
Under your hypothetical, yes.
Under your theory?
Yes.
So what sense does that make? I mean, you're saying that you agree that the inability to participate in sexual activities is not job-related, yet the reason she is not discriminated against here is because the employer didn't know about an aspect of her disability that wasn't job-related. Does that make any sense to you?
Oh, it does, Your Honor, because to hold an employer liable under the Rehab Act, the employer has to act with some awareness, whether it's on the record of disability or the actual disability itself.
Well, we're going in circles, I think. Go ahead.
All right. I just want to ask you about a provision in the CFR that actually interprets record of such impairment, the second prong.
Okay.
And it says this part of the definition is satisfied if a record relied on by an employer indicates that the individual has or has had a substantially limiting impairment. Now, it seems to me that that reg is saying that the record has to indicate to the employer that it's not only a physical but that it is a substantially limiting impairment.
Right. So at the point when the employer, the State Department, make the decision in December 2003, the record that it has before it did not include any mention of the psychological aspect of...
Right.
Of
now, does it make any difference if the employer has to know of a substantially limiting impairment, not just an impairment, that it has to be a substantially limiting impairment that is relevant? I mean, this is not relevant to, she doesn't even ask for a reasonable accommodation.
Not based on this record, not based on the complaints or the...
I'm asking, is there a difference between a substantially limiting impairment which could have an effect on her job and one that couldn't?
If it has an effect on her, that's right. There is a difference because it has to be a substantial limiting it has to be a substantial limiting in order for her to qualify to be a disabled person under the Rehab Act.
Does the State Department prohibit all people who've had cancer from serving abroad?
No, Your Honor. My time is up. May I answer this question, Your Honor?
And a couple more. Yeah.
Yeah, we.
the answer is maybe. Well, I say that only because under the METS program, METS is the one who, as Judge Henderson, I believe, pointed out, or perhaps as Taylor pointed out, the reason METS didn't give
it's really a factual question. Does the State Department prohibit all people who've had cancer from serving abroad?
No, serving abroad, no, Your Honor. No.
So, and then give your follow-up. Then you're saying this specific program is different from just serving abroad.
That's correct. Foreign service officer serving abroad is different from, let's say, my colleague here from the State Department traveling internationally to serve on a project or an issue and then come back. So
how about posted abroad?
Posted abroad, then it has to go through.
You can't be posted abroad if you've had cancer in the State Department. Is that?
No. If I understand the program from the State Department correctly, post abroad is not. Let me phrase that. Even a person with cancer, you can still be posted abroad. But under the Foreign Service issue, the Foreign Service Officer issue, that's a whole different.
That really sounds like business necessity or can't make an accommodation, those kinds of defenses. I mean, your brief's colored with these kinds of arguments, but that really doesn't. That's separate from the question whether there's a disability in the first place. In other words, I think that's all irrelevant to the question that's before us. All the color of your brief about how hard it is to move people abroad is totally irrelevant to the issue precisely before us.
That's correct, Your Honor.
A lot of your brief.
It is, only to give the full context of what we are dealing with.
Yeah.
So it's not our central argument. Your Honor is correct. I know my time is up.
Well, wait, we have a few more questions.
I'm sorry.
Are you done, Judge?
Yes.
Okay.
For now.
So I want to be totally sure I understand the government's argument here. Your argument is basically that she is not a disabled. She does not have a record of a disability under the statute because the State Department did not know that she was limited in the major life activity of sexual relations. Correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. And you also agree that sexual activities is not related to her job performance, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. What do you do about HHS's regulations, which seem to say, I'm looking at 84.14 of the regulations, they say that an employer is not allowed to inquire into the nature or severity of a handicap. And then it says this, the employer, however, may make inquiries into an applicant's ability to perform job-related functions. So the State Department's position here is that she's not a disabled person for not having told you information that the regulations protect her from telling you. Namely, that she had a limitation on sexual activity.
Right. Well, even if the State Department were to ask questions about her disability and how it relates to her job, I'm not sure that the State Department would be asking the effect on her personal life, if you will.
Well, but that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Well,
the State Department, well, let me put it to you a little differently. The State Department could not have said to her when it learned she had cancer, well, can she participate in sexual activity? Correct? They couldn't have asked that question.
They would not have asked that.
But they couldn't have under the law, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Yet your whole argument is that she fails because the employer didn't know that.
Our argument is still on that first prong, is that
you've won your case on the first prong.
I think the analysis just stopped there.
I'm talking about the record of.
No, I understand that. I understand what you're doing with that.
As I think about this case, how should I think about this conflict between your position and the government's own regulations? What do I do about that? Am I misinterpreting something here? The point being that you're claiming that her case fails because the employer didn't know a fact about her.
Right.
That you were barred from asking her.
Right.
Now, to tell me exactly what's wrong with that analysis.
Well, the answer is this. When the employer makes the decision, whatever facts that the employer has in front of it, and to the extent that the employer has facts that the employee was disabled, either has a record of disability or an actual disability, and the employer make a decision based on that information, then the employer could be held liable. But at the point of the day, when the employer does not have that information and was unaware of any disability, then you cannot hold the employer liable.
I'll just try once more.
Right.
Even though
the employer
was lawfully barred from asking her for that information?
Yes, Your Honor.
And just
isn't that a bit of a catch-22 for the plaintiff here?
Well, Your Honor, but in this particular case, we have a letter from appellant's doctor in November of 2003 saying that she is completely cancer-free and what have you.
And she had no obligation in that letter, did she, to tell you anything about her sexual activities? Correct?
Well, the answer is maybe, because her doctor is trying to help her cause with the State Department, and he should have disclosed any limitation, what have you, if she has.
But the regulations say that. But that she doesn't have to.
Right, but that doesn't mean that
it's a non-job related function.
That's true, but that doesn't mean I have to tell you,
I don't understand your answer to my question.
Are you? Let me go back to my first question just to make sure I still have that clear. Sexual activity can be a major life activity. That's the government's position.
Yes, Your Honor.
As opposed to it, you're not saying it's not a major life activity.
Right. Right.
Okay. You're conceding it can be a major life activity.
It can be. Right. One final thought, and then I would close to answer Judge Tato's question, is that she is not disqualified from a broad range of jobs.
I didn't ask that question.
No, I understand, but I think it's related to your record of a disability issue.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How?
Well, it's related in the sense that, you know, whether she...
She claims the limitation on the major life activity is sexual relations.
Well,
what, that doesn't have anything to do with work, does it?
Well, in this case, it has to be related to her job, because that's why she's bringing the claim, is that she is forbidden from joining the Foreign Service because...
Now you've moved on to the third problem.
Yeah, they're not hiring someone because of a disability that's unrelated to their job, which, by the way, is exactly what Congress was getting at.
Right.
In the disability laws.
Right. But like I'm getting back to my point, is that the employer did not have knowledge of that.
Okay.
Of that.
I think we completed this.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Is there any time left? All right. Does anyone have a question?
No.
Why don't you take a minute then?
I just want to point out that it's not just sexual relations that we don't want employers to be asking about. In the Toyota case, the employee had carpal tunnel syndrome, and the Supreme Court reversed what the lower courts did because they had focused only on the tasks that the employer knew about because they were tasks at work, and they criticized the courts for not considering that she could still brush her teeth, wash her face, bathe, tend to her flower garden, fix breakfast, do laundry, and pick up around the house. Now, I don't think we can expect employers to know about all these tasks that are central to an employee's life but are not at work, and therefore the employer has no reason to know them. We'd be cutting off disabled people from protection under the Act just because the employer doesn't know how this substantially limits a major life activity. It's none of the employer's business. I don't think anybody wants that to be required. If there are no questions, that's all I have.
All right, thank you.